Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Heirloom, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Ledger. Inheritance is supposed to mean something. A fresh start. A door opening. The weight of legacy settling comfortably on your shoulders, pushing you toward greater heights. Some people inherit wealth. Others inherit power. Some inherit stories of sacrifice, hard work, and resilience. I inherited a book. Not a diary. Not a novel. Not some forgotten scripture passed down through the generations. No, this was something far heavier. Something that smelled of old paper, of time, of blood spilled and sweat wrung out from bodies that never had the luxury of claiming their own freedom. The leather was cracked, its black surface worn and smoothed by decades, maybe centuries, of handling. The Davenport Ledger was embossed in gold across the cover, the letters slightly faded but still legible. When I ran my fingers across them, the sensation sent a chill through me, like the ghosts of history whispered beneath my skin. I didn't want to open it. Something about it felt wrong. My father's dying hands trembled as he pushed it into mine. The hospital smelled of antiseptic and something faintly metallic, the scent of sickness and slow decay. The machines around him beeped steadily, a countdown to the inevitable. His eyes, once sharp and domineering, were sunken now, barely able to focus. But his grip, was as strong as ever. "Take it," he rasped. I didn't move. "Take it," he repeated, weaker this time, but still edged with command. I swallowed against the lump in my throat and reached out. The leather was cool, firm beneath my fingers. A small part of me hoped it was nothing more than a collection of old family records, maybe property deeds or financial statements, just paperwork. But the way my father clung to it, the way his breath hitched as I took it from him, told me this wasn't just some historical curiosity. This was a burden, a final curse from a dying man who had spent his life carrying it, waiting for the moment he could pass it down and let someone else bear the weight. "Read it," he whispered, his voice barely audible over the hum of machines. "Understand it." I hesitated. "Dad, what?" "They'll come for you." My entire body went cold. His fingers dug into my wrist, his once mighty strength reduced to frail desperation. "The debt is still unpaid." The words hung in the air between us. Unspoken things lurked beneath them. Things neither of us dared to name. The weight of history pressed down on me, as if the spirits of the past had suddenly gathered in the hospital room, waiting, watching. He coughed violently, his body convulsing with the effort. The machines shrieked. Nurses rushed in. I stumbled backward, clutching the ledger as the doctors barked orders. And then, silence. A long, flat beep. His eyes were still open, fixed on me, but there was nothing behind them anymore. I didn't cry. I just stood there, the ledger gripped so tightly in my hands that my knuckles turned white. The weight had shifted, and I already knew this wasn't over. The night it started. That night, I sat alone in my apartment, staring at the book as it sat untouched on my kitchen table. The world outside was quiet. Too quiet. The kind of quiet that sinks its claws into your skin, making you hyper-aware of your own breath, your own heartbeat, the faintest rustle of air against the curtains. I poured myself a glass of whiskey, but I didn't drink it. My hands hovered over the cover of the ledger, the hesitation gnawing at me like an old wound reopening. Something inside me didn't want to know what was in those pages, and that made me certain I had to. I flipped it open. The first page was neat, written in old-fashioned script with the kind of penmanship that no longer existed in the modern world. My great-great-grandfather's name stood at the top, a declaration of ownership, of dominion. Elias Davenport. The second line made my stomach turn. A record of Negroes owned, traded, and disposed. My hands clenched into fists. Page after page, the names continued. Some were marked with details. Ezekiel, age 23, sold to the McAllister Plantation, Georgia, 1847. Miriam, age 16, lost in transit. Josiah, age 30, attempted escape. Executed, 1851. I could barely breathe. They weren't names. They were tallies. Transactions. The inked remnants of human lives reduced to numbers in a ledger. And then, on page 147, my eyes locked onto a name that felt different. Josephine Graves. Indentured to the Davenport estate. 17 years old. Transferred to a sugar plantation in Mississippi. No further notes. A single question hammered in my mind, over and over. What happened to her? A sharp knock at my door made me jump. I snapped the book shut, my breath hitching. Knock. 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 I checked my phone. 1:17 a.m. No one should be at my door this late. I stood, the floorboards creaking beneath my feet, my pulse hammering against my ribcage. My fingers hovered over the doorknob, hesitation battling with curiosity. When I finally pulled it open, there was nothing there. No person. No shadow. Just a single cream-colored envelope lying on my doorstep. With trembling fingers, I bent down and picked it up. The paper was smooth, unmarked, except for six words scrawled in bold black ink. Your family took. Now we take. A chill ran down my spine. I turned my head, scanning the darkness beyond the doorframe. The street was empty. Silent. And then, the distant sound of footsteps, fading into the night. Chapter 2, The First Warning. Silence stretched across my apartment like a noose. A heavy, suffocating kind of silence, the kind that makes you second-guess whether you're really alone. I stood in the doorway, the cold night air biting at my skin, staring at the envelope in my trembling hands. The words on its surface burned into my brain. Your family took. Now we take. The letters were sharp, jagged, written with the kind of anger that doesn't fade with time. My fingers tightened around the paper, knuckles white with tension. The street outside was empty, but I knew I wasn't alone. A shadow moved in the distance. A figure, standing at the far end of the block beneath the flickering glow of a street lamp. I couldn't make out their face. Just a silhouette. Watching. Waiting. I stepped back into my apartment, heart pounding, and shut the door. The lock clicked into place, but it didn't feel like enough. I double-checked it. Then triple-checked. My hands felt numb as I carried the envelope to the kitchen table. I didn't open it right away. I just stared. This wasn't random. This wasn't some prank. This was deliberate. Personal. And I had a sickening feeling that whatever was inside would change everything. With a slow, measured breath, I slid my finger under the flap and tore it open. A single sheet of aged, yellowed paper fell onto the table. The ink was faded but still legible. A name. Josephine Graves. And beneath it, six words that sent ice through my veins. Debt isn't paid with silence. I sat back, my breath coming in uneven gasps. My stomach twisted into a knot so tight it felt like I might be sick. Josephine Graves. I had just read that name in the ledger. 17 years old. Taken from my family's estate and sent to Mississippi. No further details. No resolution. But someone remembered her. Someone wanted me to remember her. I pulled the ledger toward me with shaking hands, flipping through the fragile pages, my eyes scanning the long, cursed history of my bloodline. The name was there, just as it had been before, but this time, it felt different. Heavier. What had happened to Josephine? What had happened to all of them? I traced my fingers over the ink, my mind racing with a million questions. Who sent this? Was it the same person who had been standing outside? Were they coming for me next? A sharp bang against my window made me jump so violently that my chair scraped against the floor. I turned sharply, heart hammering. The window was closed, curtains drawn, but I could feel something, someone on the other side. I moved slowly, step by step, until I was close enough to peek through the curtain. The street was still empty. No one there. No movement. Then I saw it. Red paint. A single word, smeared across the glass in dripping, uneven strokes. Ledger. I stumbled back, my pulse roaring in my ears. The message was fresh, the paint still wet, still bleeding. Whoever had done this was just here. I turned, grabbed my phone with shaky hands, and dialed 911. The ring felt like it lasted an eternity before a voice finally answered. 911, what's your emergency? I swallowed hard. There's someone outside my house. They. I stopped, looking back at the window, the red paint stark against the darkness. They vandalized my window. Left a note at my door. The operator's voice remained calm, detached. Are they still outside? I peered through the curtain again, scanning the street. It was still empty. Too empty. like whoever had been there had melted into the night. I don't think so, I murmured. Stay inside, keep your doors locked. Officers are on their way. I nodded, even though she couldn't see me. Okay, but the call didn't make me feel safer. Nothing did, because deep down I knew this wasn't over. This was just the beginning, a blood debt. I barely slept that night. I sat in my living room with the ledger open on the table in front of me, staring at the names, the dates, the weight of my family's sins. The police arrived within 20 minutes, but they didn't find anything. No footprints. No fingerprints. Just the paint on the window and the note on my table. Could be a prank, one officer had said, chewing gum like he was bored out of his mind. Yeah, I muttered. A really personal prank. His partner, a woman with sharp eyes and a tired face, studied me for a moment. You have any enemies? I let out a short, humorless laugh. Not that I know of. But that was a lie. Because whoever sent that message hated me. Hated my family. Hated everything the name Davenport stood for. And maybe, just maybe, they had every right to. The officers left after half an hour. Call if anything else happens, the woman said before walking out the door. I knew I wouldn't. Because calling the police wasn't going to stop this. Whoever was behind this wasn't looking for a confrontation. They weren't looking for an arrest. They were looking for justice. And justice, in their eyes, wasn't measured in words. It wasn't measured in apologies or money or reparations. Justice was blood. I sat there in the dim glow of my kitchen light, running my hands through my hair, my fingers tangling in the knots of stress and fear. A knock at the door made my entire body go rigid. No. No, no, no. Not again. I didn't move. The knock came again, firmer this time. I swallowed, my throat dry as sandpaper. My hands were ice cold as I reached for the nearest thing I could use as a weapon, a kitchen knife resting in the sink. Knock. I edged toward the door, every muscle in my body coiled tight with tension. Who is it? I called, my voice lower than I expected. Silence. Then a voice, low, calm, dangerously measured. You know who I am, Davenport. I exhaled sharply, my mind racing. And for the first time, I realized something deeply unsettling. Whoever was on the other side of that door didn't just want to send a message. They wanted to collect a debt. And I was the one meant to pay. Chapter 3, Shadows of the Past. I didn't move. Didn't breathe. Didn't blink. The voice on the other side of my door was calm. Too calm. The kind of calm that carried certainty. Certainty that I wasn't going anywhere. Certainty that I knew exactly what they wanted, certainty that there was no escaping the weight of history pressing down on me. I tightened my grip on the kitchen knife, my pulse hammering in my ears. My apartment suddenly felt small, too small, like the walls were closing in, pushing me toward the inevitable. You know who I am, Davenport. The words slithered through the wood, quiet but razor sharp. A beat of silence. Then a single, deliberate knock. Not aggressive. Not impatient. Just a slow, measured reminder that I was on the other side of history's door, and whoever stood beyond it was here to collect. I swallowed hard, my throat dry, my tongue sticking to the roof of my mouth. Every rational part of me screamed to stay silent, to not engage, to wait them out, to let them believe I wasn't home. But I knew that wouldn't work. They wouldn't be here if they weren't sure. I took a slow, shaky breath, forcing my voice to be steadier than I felt. What do you want? A pause. Then, justice. The word lingered in the air, thick with meaning, tangled with pain that stretched back generations. Justice. It wasn't a request. It wasn't a plea. It was a demand. I flexed my fingers around the handle of the knife, my knuckles aching from how tightly I was gripping it. You have the wrong person, I said, my voice barely above a whisper. A dark chuckle. Low. Knowing. That's what they all say. Another silence. Then, open the door. I didn't. Couldn't. Instead, I did the only thing I could think to do. I took a single, cautious step backward, my socked feet making no sound against the hardwood. I needed space. Needed a way out. Because something told me that if I opened that door, I wouldn't be closing it again. Ever. I moved toward the back of my apartment, toward the kitchen where my phone lay abandoned on the counter. I kept my eyes on the door as I reached for it, my fingers closing around the smooth glass. I turned the screen on. No service. My stomach dropped. My eyes flicked toward the router across the room, the small green lights off. No Wi-Fi. No signal. Someone had cut me off. And that meant this wasn't random. This was planned. The hairs on the back of my neck rose. The knock came again. louder this time. I sucked in a sharp breath, every instinct in my body screaming run. But run where? It was my apartment. My space. My safe haven. Only it wasn't safe anymore. They had made sure of that. I forced my legs to move, step by careful step, toward the window. My apartment was on the second floor. Too high to jump, but maybe, I could climb down. If I could get to the fire escape, I could. Glass shattered. I barely had time to register what was happening before my window exploded inward, shards raining down like jagged confetti. A figure lunged through the opening. Dark hoodie. Mask. Gloves. Prepared. Calculated. Dangerous. I stumbled back, my heart slamming against my ribs, my knife raised in a pathetic attempt at defense. The intruder moved fast, too fast, crossing the room in two strides before I could react. A hand grabbed my wrist, twisting hard, sending pain shooting up my arm. The knife clattered to the floor. I barely had time to curse before they shoved me backward, slamming me against the kitchen counter. My back screamed in protest, the wind knocked from my lungs. I gasped, struggling to push them off, but they were stronger, too strong. They leaned in, breath hot against my ear. "Did you think you could run from this?" I thrashed, but it was useless. "You don't even know what's coming, do you?" the voice murmured, almost amused. Something cold pressed against my temple. A gun. My stomach lurched. "You're gonna listen now, Davenport," the intruder continued. "Because this? This is just the beginning." I forced my eyes to meet theirs, my breath coming in short, shallow bursts. Who sent you?" A smirk. "Someone who remembers." The words hit me like a sledgehammer. Someone who remembers. Not someone seeking money. Not someone after some vague idea of fairness. No. This was about revenge. I stared at them, my mind racing. I didn't even know who they were, but they knew me. They knew my family. They knew the ledger. And they weren't alone. "Look outside," they murmured. I hesitated. "Look." Slowly, I turned my head, eyes shifting toward the broken window. My pulse thundered as I saw it. People. Dozens of them. Standing across the street. Silent. Watching. Some held signs. Others held phones, recording. A few carried something far more dangerous. Ropes. Chains. Baseball bats. My vision blurred at the edges. This wasn't just one person. This was an entire movement. And they weren't here to scare me. They were here to make sure the ledger was balanced. The figure in my kitchen pressed the gun harder against my head. "They're waiting for me to finish the job," they whispered. "Or you can make it easy." I swallowed against the nausea rising in my throat. What do you want?" I croaked. A chuckle. "We want what was taken." My mind spun, grasping for an answer, for a way out, for anything that might stop this from spiraling further. But there was nothing. Because my ancestors had already written the ending. I just hadn't realized until now. I was about to be a part of it. Chapter 4. Blood on the Ledger. I always thought of history as something distant, something buried in books, something that belonged to museums and long-forgotten places. I never thought of history as something that could drag me from my own kitchen, press the barrel of a gun to my head, and whisper in my ear that my name was on its list. Yet here I was, held hostage in my own apartment, with a stranger's breath hot against my skin and a city of ghosts staring at me through the shattered window. I could barely process what I was seeing. How many of them were out there, standing beneath the dim glow of streetlights, their faces hidden in shadow. Silent. Still. Waiting. For what? For this man, this stranger, who had broken into my home like he owned it, who held me against my kitchen counter as if I was the intruder in my own life. He was calm. That was the part that scared me the most. Not the gun. Not the people outside. Him. The certainty in his voice. The way he looked at me like I wasn't a person at all. Just a name in a book, an entry on a ledger, a debt waiting to be collected. "We want what was taken," he repeated, his voice smooth as glass, but sharp enough to cut. "So let's start with an apology." My breath caught in my throat. An apology. My mind raced. Was that all this was? A chance to beg? To grovel? I don't understand," I stammered, hating the way my voice shook. "Who are you?" He didn't answer. Instead, he pulled a folded piece of paper from his pocket and slapped it onto the counter. It wasn't paper. It was a photograph. I forced my eyes down. An old, sepia-toned picture. Faded around the edges. A girl, no older than 17, standing in front of a wooden house, her eyes dark and unreadable. She wore a simple dress, her hair pulled into a tight braid. Something was written at the bottom. Josephine Graves, 1843. My stomach clenched. You recognize her? The man asked, his grip tightening. I nodded, my mouth suddenly dry. I had seen the name in the ledger. I had traced my fingers over it. I had whispered it to myself in the dead of night, trying to piece together the puzzle. She worked for your family, he continued, voice low and controlled. 17 years old. Stolen. Forced to labor until her hands bled. I swallowed hard. I didn't. She was my ancestor. The words hit me like a hammer to the chest. Everything made sense. The notes. The warnings. The paint smeared across my window. This wasn't random. This wasn't some faceless enemy. This was personal. You don't even know what they did to her, do you? He asked, eyes burning. What they did to all of them. I wanted to say I didn't. That I had never known, that my father had never told me. But I had the ledger. I had the truth right in front of me, written in ink so old it had stained the pages forever. I did know. I knew what happened to people like Josephine. I knew what happened when they tried to run. I knew what happened when they fought back. And I knew that whatever justice this man was after, it wasn't going to come from an apology. He wanted blood. I had never been more sure of anything in my life. A reckoning written in ink and blood. You think I deserve to die for what my ancestors did? I finally asked, my voice barely above a whisper. His lips twitched into something that wasn't quite a smile. You think they deserve to? He countered. My stomach twisted. Tell me something, Davenport, he continued, stepping back just enough to let me breathe. If you had to choose between your own life and paying what's owed, what would you do? I didn't answer. I couldn't. Because the truth was, I didn't know. What was I supposed to say? That I was innocent? That I had never owned anyone? That I had never whipped a man's back until his skin peeled like paper? It didn't matter. Because my bloodline had. And to them, to him, that meant I was already guilty. His grip on the gun never wavered. Some debts can't be paid with money, he said, his voice quiet now. Some debts demand more. I felt my chest tighten. This isn't about reparations, I murmured. This is about revenge. His eyes gleamed in the dim light. And what's the difference? I opened my mouth. Closed it. Because deep down, I knew there wasn't one. Reparations meant giving back what was taken. And sometimes, the only thing left to give was a life. You think killing me will change history? I forced out, my heart pounding. He tilted his head slightly, considering me. No. But it'll change the future. He stepped forward, pressed the gun to my forehead. I flinched. Outside, the crowd moved, a slow, unsettling shift, like a beast awakening from slumber. I had never seen so many people silent at once. No shouting. No chaos. Just waiting. Waiting for him to decide. Waiting for me to pay. For the first time in my life, I felt the full weight of the past settle on my shoulders. All of it. The screams. The labor. The stolen names. The erased families. I had never carried it before. But I did now. Because history wasn't buried. It was alive. Breathing. Standing in my kitchen with a loaded gun, wearing a mask, whispering about a 17-year-old girl who had been taken, erased, sold, destroyed. Please, I choked out. His finger twitched over the trigger. I wasn't ready to die. Not for this. Not for something I didn't do. And yet, maybe that was the point. Because neither were they. Chapter 5. Manipulation and Vengeance. I had never been more afraid in my life. Fear wasn't supposed to feel like this. Not this heavy, not this consuming, not this personal. Fear was supposed to be fleeting. A momentary jolt. A quick impulse. A sharp inhale before an immediate reaction. But this fear? It sat deep in my chest, pressing against my ribs like a vice, squeezing tighter with every second that passed. A gun was pressed to my forehead. A stranger stood in my kitchen, his voice calm, his hand steady, his finger resting lightly against the trigger. He could pull it at any moment. End everything. And yet, he wasn't pulling it. Not yet. Because this wasn't just about killing me. This was about making me understand why I deserved to die. Outside, the people waited. A silent jury, their presence pressing against my skin like unseen hands. Watching. Judging. Ready. Ready for justice. Ready for vengeance. Ready for the ledger to be balanced, with my blood. I swallowed, my throat dry, my pulse hammering in my ears so loudly that I could barely hear my own thoughts. Think, think, think. I had seconds to figure out how to survive this. And the only thing I had left was my voice. So I spoke. You don't want to do this. His eyes flickered, barely reacting. You want justice, I get that, I continued, forcing my voice to stay steady, to stay human. But killing me doesn't fix anything. It doesn't bring Josephine back. It doesn't undo the past. All it does is put another name on another ledger. Another grave in another cemetery. His jaw clenched. Don't tell me what this does and doesn't fix. I swallowed hard. I had his attention, but barely. I'm not telling you, I said quickly. I'm just asking. Think. Do you really want to be like them? He flinched. It was slight. Barely there. But I saw it. And I grabbed onto it with everything I had. You think I'm a monster? I pushed. Because of my blood. Because of my name. Because of something my ancestors did before I was even born. You benefited, he spat. I nodded, fast, desperate to keep him engaged. I did. You're right. I didn't ask for it, but that doesn't change anything. I'm here because of what they did. But what about you? His grip on the gun tightened. You're angry. You have every right to be, I said, my breath uneven. But if you pull that trigger, you don't just get justice. You get blood on your hands. You become them. The ones who took. The ones who hurt. The ones who left behind ledgers full of names that weren't supposed to be erased. Silence. A charged, dangerous silence. His breathing was heavier now. I could see it. Feel it. He wasn't just fighting me anymore. He was fighting himself. I had to keep pushing. If you do this, it doesn't stop here, I said, my voice barely above a whisper. It keeps going. The cycle never ends. Someone will come for you next. Or someone you love. And then someone after them. Because revenge doesn't heal anything. It just makes the wound deeper. For a moment, just a fraction of a second, something in his eyes changed. The gun shook in his grip. Then bang. I flinched. My ears rang. My body tensed for pain, for death. But I wasn't dead. The shot had gone wide, hitting the kitchen cabinet behind me. My breath left me in a shuddering gasp. He was hesitating. I could use that. I had to. You don't have to do this, I whispered. His chest rose and fell in uneven breaths. His finger twitched on the trigger. You think this ends with me? I continued, softer now, threading my words with something dangerous. Guilt. Doubt. Uncertainty. If you kill me, do you think they'll stop? The people outside. I nodded toward the window. You think they'll walk away? Go home. Or do you think maybe they'll start seeing you as a threat too? His eyes flickered toward the window. They came for justice, I whispered. But the second you pull that trigger, you become something else. A liability. A loose end. And the people who sent you here? They don't want loose ends. His breath hitched. His hands trembled. I was getting to him. Think about it, I pushed. What happens next? Do you walk out that door? Do they clap you on the back and say, good job? I shook my head, my voice turning sharp. Or do they look at you and realize, you know too much now? You were inside. You saw my face. You made it personal. And now you're next. His grip loosened. His mind was turning against him. Doubt was a virus, and I had planted it. You didn't come here alone, did you? I whispered. His jaw clenched, but he didn't answer. I already knew. Someone sent you. Someone planned this. But what happens when it's done? When they don't need you anymore? I let the words sink in. Do you think they'll let you walk away? Do you think they'll let you go on with your life? The muscles in his arms tensed. I went for the kill. You're a pawn to them. Just like I was a pawn to my family's past. The only difference. I leaned in slightly, lowering my voice to something sharp and cutting. I just figured it out before you did. He snapped. His hand shot out, grabbed me by the collar, and slammed me against the counter. Shut the fuck up, he hissed. But his voice wasn't steady anymore. I had him. I fucking had him. If you kill me, you become them, I whispered, right into his ear. And if they see you as a problem, you become a name on a list. Just like me. Just like everyone in that book. The gun shook. His breathing was ragged. His mind was fracturing. I had one shot. One final push. Make your choice, I whispered. Because if you don't, someone else already made it for you. A full body shudder ran through him. Then, he let go. I collapsed against the counter, gasping, barely able to process what had just happened. The gun clattered to the floor. And then he ran. Out the broken window. Into the night. I didn't stop him. Because I knew something he didn't. He was right about one thing. Some debts can't be paid with money. And the people outside, they weren't done collecting. Chapter 6, The Noose. I didn't move. Didn't speak. Didn't breathe. The gun was still on the floor, the metal glinting in the dim light of my kitchen. My ears were ringing. My body ached. My skin was covered in a cold sweat, as if I'd been dipped in ice water. But I was alive, and that wasn't supposed to be possible. Outside, the crowd hadn't moved. They still stood there, silent, unmoving, like statues carved from shadows and history itself. Waiting. Waiting for him to kill me. Waiting for justice. Waiting for the ledger to be balanced. But he was gone. He had left through the broken window, disappearing into the night, his footsteps swallowed by the darkness before anyone outside could stop him. And now they were waiting for me to come out instead. I should have called the cops. Should have locked my doors. Should have taken that gun off the floor and held on to it like my life depended on it. Because it did. But none of that would have mattered. Because this wasn't over. It wasn't ever going to be over. And deep down, some part of me already knew how this was going to end. I staggered to my feet, legs unsteady, my hands gripping the counter for balance. My apartment felt wrong, like it no longer belonged to me. Like I had just walked into someone else's crime scene, and my body was next to be outlined in chalk. I grabbed the ledger off the table, my fingers leaving damp smudges against the ancient leather. The names. Josephine Graves. The first name I had read in this book. The first name that had started this entire nightmare. I could still see her face from the photograph, burned into my memory like a ghost pressing its fingers into my skull. Her eyes. Her silence. Her grief. And I could hear my father's voice, weak and rasping in his hospital bed, pressing the ledger into my hands, whispering words that had felt like paranoia at the time, but were now prophecy. They'll come for you. For us. Blood doesn't forget. And neither do the people we stole from. A knock on the door shattered my thoughts. I froze. Another knock. Louder. I already knew who it was before I even turned my head. It wasn't over. I wasn't free. They hadn't come for just one life. They had come for all of them. The sins of my family stretched far beyond what I could see. And now, they wanted every last debt paid. The knocking turned into pounding. I took a step back, gripping the edge of the counter, my breath coming in sharp, uneven bursts. And then, the door handle turned. They weren't waiting for permission anymore. No escape. The door burst open with such force that it cracked against the wall, the impact rattling through my bones. A rush of bodies flooded in, faceless figures moving like a single entity, like a wave crashing into a sinking ship, swallowing it whole. I barely had time to react before I was grabbed. Hands, too many hands, rough and strong, dragging me forward before I could even think to fight. My legs buckled, my body yanked like a puppet with its strings violently jerked. I gasped, struggling, thrashing, but there was nowhere to go. No exit. No mercy. A hand wrapped around my throat, not choking, but holding, forcing me still. A face appeared in front of mine, blurred at first, until the features snapped into focus. Naomi Graves. She was younger than I expected. Mid-30s, maybe. Dark brown eyes that were sharp, calculated, but empty of sympathy. A face that might have been kind in another life, but was now sculpted by something colder. Hate. Righteousness. The weight of knowing that history was finally tipping in her favor. She tilted her head, watching me, studying the fear in my face. "You think you're the victim," she said, her voice calm. Measured. I shook my head, or tried to, but the grip on my throat tightened slightly. "Don't," she said softly. "I want you to listen. I didn't have a choice." She reached into her pocket and pulled out a folded piece of paper, holding it in front of my face. I recognized the handwriting immediately. My father's. My heart stopped. I scanned the words, my breath stuttering, my vision tunneling. It was a letter, dated months before he died. "To the descendants of the Graves family," it began. "And then, I know what my ancestors did to yours. I know their crimes were never punished. I know the blood on their hands was never cleaned. I don't expect forgiveness, but I do expect consequences. And when they come, I won't fight them. Neither will my son." My body went cold. My father knew. He had known this was coming. He had prepared for it. And he had left me to take the fall. A low, sharp laugh escaped Naomi's lips, her fingers tightening around my shirt as she yanked me forward. "He was a coward," she whispered. "He let you die for him." "I," my voice failed. The words didn't come. Because she was right. This wasn't my fight. But my father had written my name in ink the second he left this ledger in my hands. And now, I was a debt to be paid. "Stand him up," Naomi ordered. The hands around me tightened, yanking me upright as my knees nearly buckled. Someone moved in my peripheral vision. Something dangled in their hands. Rope. A noose. I panicked. Fought. Kicked and screamed. But it didn't matter. Because I was already history. Already written. Already another name in the ledger. And when Naomi leaned in close, her breath warm against my ear, she whispered the last words I would ever hear. Your name's on the list. The ledger closes. I never thought much about last words. What my last breath would feel like. How death would come for me. I thought it would be quiet. A hospital room, maybe. Old age. A gradual slipping away. But it wasn't. It was hands dragging me out the door. It was ropes tightening around my skin. It was history breathing down my neck, whispering the sins of my ancestors into my ear. It was Josephine Graves' name burning into my mind as the noose tightened. And just before the world snapped away into nothingness, I wondered, would they remember my name? Or would they just cross it off the ledger and move on to the next? Chapter 7, The Final Debt. History doesn't ask for permission. It doesn't wait for you to be ready. It doesn't care if you understand what's happening before it swallows you whole. It simply arrives. And when it does, you either face it or you become part of it. I had spent my entire life never thinking about the past. Never thinking about the names in that ledger. The ones who came before me. The ones whose lives were stolen, sold, broken, erased. I had never thought about what it meant to carry the blood of those who took. But now I understood. Now I was just another name in the book. Just another debt to be paid. The rope burned against my skin. It wasn't tight yet, just looped loosely around my throat, rough fibers scratching at my flesh as hands held me in place. My arms were pinned behind me. My legs barely held my weight. My breath came in short, uneven bursts as I tried, futilely, to convince myself that this wasn't happening. But it was, and there was nothing I could do to stop it. Outside, the world was quiet. The crowd still stood there, unmoving, silent, their faces unreadable in the dim glow of streetlights and flickering porch lamps. They weren't angry. They weren't celebrating. They were just watching, waiting for history to settle the score. For the first time, I realized they weren't here for revenge. They were here for justice. And justice doesn't hesitate. Justice doesn't flinch. A single voice broke the silence. Naomi. She stood in front of me, arms crossed, her face set like stone, her voice steady, unshaken. Your family took, she said. I swallowed hard, the weight of the rope pressing against my throat. They took lives. They took names. They took futures. Her voice didn't waver. And when it was over, they wrote it all down in that ledger. They made records of what they stole. As if they were keeping track of property instead of people. I wanted to speak. To say something. But I had nothing left. Because she was right. Because everything in me already knew how this was going to end. You thought you could just inherit their wealth, she continued. Their privilege. Their name. And that the rest of us would just. She exhaled slowly. Forget. I didn't answer. Because I had thought that. I had never said it, never admitted it, but some deep, dark part of me had assumed that time would wash away the sins of my family, that history would smooth out the edges, that what was done generations ago would simply become a story, something to be whispered about in libraries, in textbooks, in old, faded documents that no one really cared about. But it wasn't forgotten. Not by them. Not by her. Not by the ghosts who still lingered in the bloodlines of those who had suffered. And now, now it was my turn to be written in the pages. I tried to steady my breath. I tried to keep my hands from shaking, but my body betrayed me. Fear was a living, breathing thing inside me now. It crawled under my skin, wrapped itself around my bones, made every breath feel like a countdown. But more than fear, there was something else. Guilt. Because deep down I knew this was justice. And justice. It doesn't care if you're sorry. It doesn't care if you didn't commit the crime yourself. It doesn't care if you never knew the names in that ledger before they were forced in front of your face. Justice is history remembering when the rest of the world tries to forget. And history had never forgotten me. The rope tightened. A gasp escaped my lips. Not because it was choking me. Not yet. But because this was it. This was the moment. Naomi stepped closer, so close I could see the flicker of something. Regret? Doubt. In her eyes. But she didn't let it stop her. She just held up the ledger. The book that had brought me here. You know what happens next, she said. And I did. I had known it from the second I read the first name in that book. Josephine Graves. She was just 17 when my ancestors sent her away. Sold. Traded like an object. A transaction written down in ink, her fate sealed with a flick of a pen. Now I was the ink. I was the transaction. I was the final entry in the ledger. The noose tightened. The crowd shifted, the silence deepening. I felt my pulse hammering in my ears. This was it. This was justice. And then, a single voice rang out. Wait. The tension cracked. Heads turned. A figure stepped forward. A man. Mid-50s, maybe older. Wrinkled hands. Eyes that had seen too much, held too much. He didn't look at me. He looked at Naomi. Is this really what we want? He asked, his voice rough, edged with something I didn't understand. Naomi's jaw clenched. This is what's owed, she said. He didn't move. And when we take it, then what? His gaze swept over the crowd, his hands flexing at his sides. Does it end here? Or do we just keep adding names to the list? A flicker of hesitation. Small. Brief. But it was there. I held my breath, my lungs burning, waiting for the decision that would determine whether I lived or became another ghost in history's wake. Naomi stared at me. I stared back. The ledger was still in her hands. My name was still in it. Finally, slowly, she spoke. Take him away. I barely had time to process what that meant before the noose was loosened and my body sagged. The hands that had held me upright suddenly dragged me back instead, away from the crowd, away from the light, away from the death that had been seconds from claiming me. I didn't know where they were taking me. I didn't ask. I didn't fight. Because I was alive. For now. But one thing was clear. The ledger was still open. And debts. Debts never go unpaid forever. Final entry. I don't know how much time has passed. Days. Weeks. Maybe longer. All I know is that I'm somewhere else now. Somewhere dark. Somewhere forgotten. A place where the past lives. They didn't kill me. But they didn't let me go either. And maybe that's worse. Because when you're dead, history ends. But when you're alive, history keeps writing you in. And the story isn't over yet. I stare at the walls of my new prison, my fingers tracing invisible names into the concrete. Names from the ledger. Names that never got their justice. Naomi was wrong about one thing. She thought this ended with me. But I know the truth. There will always be another name. Always another debt to be paid. And someday, someone else will inherit this ledger. And when they do, they'll have to decide, erase the past, or become part of it. Just like I did. Just like we all do.